Good morning now to our media commentator, Andrew Holden.
Good morning. Busy day for you. Yep. I'm sure you and the team want to have a lie down once this is finished.
Well, there's none of those in 2020. You know that, Andrew. Journalist for more than 30 years, including 5 as editor of the Press in Christchurch, 4 as editor of chief of The Age in Melbourne. Obviously, we were going to talk about one aspect of last week's story, and I still want to do that because I think it's important to discuss for many people, questioning why the media received information and then, given it was obviously a story, did not go public with it immediately. We'll talk about how off-record and the receipt of information works. In the meantime, obviously, last week's news has been superseded by Mr. Muller's decision this morning, or last night, we understand, and the caucus being told this morning that he would resign immediately as leader of the opposition. This is pretty rare in our politics. I can't think of an example in Oz politics either.
No,
the resignations tend to come because your caucus is telling you to go.
That's right. And in Australia, you tend to need to be prime minister before you get rolled, really.
Yeah, it's true.
And in fact, they've changed the laws so that opposition leaders can't be rolled as they have in the past. It needs a substantial vote amongst the membership to do so. But pretty remarkable. I mean, the only thing I'd reflect on with the Muller case is that strong questioning last week, particularly when he was down in Christchurch, Ashburton, doing the announcement, and the one particular reporter keeping on pushing the issue and trying to understand it. You know, and to me, that's a great value of persistent questioning. It might seem really irritating to a number of people and quite boring, but you know, it establishes on the record what the clarity of a particular political leader and whether they're telling you the truth or not.
Well, look, I think the thing also is it is clear reading from the statement, and he's upfront about it. The role's taken a heavy toll on me personally, on my family. This has become untenable for a health perspective. He is being very forthright there. Whatever one news story's impact or another news story's impact is on you, he's made a decision for his own health and his family's well-being on this. No one is going to criticise that. If you need to do that, then you do that. Let's look, though, from a perspective of media practice about what happened with the leaking and the receipt of information from Hamish Walker to 3 media outlets, and RNZ's was one of those to receive. I'm just trying to remember the reporter's exact words. There was a conversation with Mr. Walker over he was being questioned about claims he'd been racist in his talk of, you know, 11,000 people from Pakistan and India and Korea,
indeed,
presumably South Korea coming, they're going to be all over South. And so he's been questioned about whether that was racist. And then he said, I will send you some off-record information if you don't identify me. And the journalist says, OK, and receives the information. And we now know that the information the journalists in those 3 outlets received was clearly a political story in its own right, that an MP would hand that over to them. But where are we with the protocols about what you could then do as a journalist with the information you'd received?
It's a terrible circumstance because, of course, you're being obliged to guarantee confidentiality before you've seen the material. And that's a really tricky position for a journalist to be in because you want to understand what the information is that's being passed on. You've got no particular context. It could be extraordinarily valuable and very clearly in the public interest, but you're obliged to give this a promise of keeping your source confidential. And, of course, that's one of the most significant ethical beliefs that journalists have, and quite a number around the world have gone to jail by refusing to reveal their sources. I guess there's 2 elements to it. When you're dealing with a politician, you know there's clearly a political strategy behind it. So that's always in your mind that the information you're going to be given has a particular purpose. It's in their interests to give it to you. So that's one of the things that you're framing in your mind. But once you receive that information, you're of course not obliged to use it. If it's not valuable, if it doesn't have any particular power, you can just leave it be where it is. In this case, of course, the question is the receipt of the information, of course, how that information is flowing around. It's a very murky
one. But the issue is you've agreed to not reveal information you've received. You didn't know what you were getting. Then when you get stuff that patently should not have been given to you, and that in itself is a story.
True.
But you've got to, or you feel like you've got to honour this agreement. It was interesting because I think it was the Herald that went first. saying information had been provided to journalists without giving more details on from whom or how.
Yeah.
So again, you've got your normal practicing protocols. If you breach them, you risk being cut out from ever being a source again.
True, you're no longer trusted.
There would be a point, and this is an interesting one, where the material you received was so egregiously inappropriate or illegal that you would feel obliged to take action, would there not?
Well, no, not really. And this is the terrible bind that journalists can find themselves in, that in a range of different... It depends on it. There's been a really good report done recently on the Perugia, which is the scale of ethics the journalist should operate under, and including this one. And essentially it says that the principle of confidentiality can only really be broken if you're talking about potential loss of life.
Right.
At that point...
Well, I was just thinking of that. That's obvious. Yeah. Someone's threatening to do something.
Correct. And that, or they have information about somebody else who might be in a life-threatening situation. At that point...
That's interesting.
You can breach the confidentiality.
So the Bible of ethics is that solid.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah.
So these journalists, so for those who said to those journalists, you should have been writing this up, actually, from their own journalistic ethical perspectives, they were complying.
They were. That's right. This had not got to the scale where it was right to breach it. And the long-term difficulty for a journalist in this circumstance is that if you do breach it in this case because you feel that the politician's been egregious and shouldn't have this information, what's the message you're sending to the rest of the political or anybody else who might deal with you as a journalist? That you hold the power to flick the switch whenever you make the judgment that it's wrong. So in many respects, it goes back to that first decision you've made as a journalist is to guarantee confidentiality. And arguably, and I know there have been some commentators saying it, they should have pushed him harder to say, no, I'm not going to guarantee that to you until I understand what the information is that you're going to provide me.
A couple of minutes left, please, for your second topic, because I just want to do a little reader before midday.
Well, the second topic that feeds off this is confidential information is all very well, and we've seen it in a couple of circumstances, but you still need to stack up that it's true. It's not enough to say I've got this information and therefore I'm going to publish it. You're still obliged as a journalist to do it. So the one that I really wanted to highlight just very briefly, because we were going to talk about it a couple of weeks ago, was the outing of a former High Court judge in Australia, Dyson Hayden, by a couple of journalists at the Sydney Morning Herald, in Kate McClymont and Jacqueline Maley, have been able to, thanks to 2 years of research, find out that he's been sexually harassing a number of young female associates. Again, they found out this information early. They've kept the confidentiality, but they still have to stack it up before they can go public with it. And that's often the challenge for a journalist, is it's not that first guarantee, it's how you then prove it to be true.
And that's obviously legitimate, because this is where all sorts of other obligations come across journalists, not the least of them being the law, being defamation law.
Indeed.
But also, just if you're going to make a serious allegation about someone, you have an obligation to have your facts as straight as you can get them. And this is, we're not an intelligence agency. That's an interesting quote, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, that's right. I mean, and what journalists are finding these days is that people can leak substantial amounts of information to them. But by the same token, governments have a lot of powers to follow you and scrutinise what you've been doing. And so a lot of journalists are now finding themselves almost in this spy world where they've got to have drop boxes and a whole range of different skills makes the task even more difficult.
Thank you. Andrew Holden is our media commentator.